Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your radio home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Usage in the lineup the last couple of years has been a constant topic of conversation. The fact that he doesn't get consistent first-line minutes. His agents, Mike Liut and Andy Scott, do confirm that it probably would be mutually beneficial to both the player and to the team if Patrick Laine is traded.
And with that, from TSN Hockey Insider, Pierre LeBrun, dropping a LeBomb, if you will, the offseason for the Winnipeg Jets and Patrick Laine has been turned on its head. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all about the Winnipeg Jets. We're all about Patrick Laine in this first hour of the program, particularly. I am your host, Drew Mandel. I'm joined here by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. And it's funny, you know, in the span of 7 days, because last Saturday, you know, the Jets had acquired Paul Stastny. We thought that, you know, that would sort of put to bed the Patrick Laine rumors and trade discussion that, well, I can speak for you guys, but I'll speak for myself here and say that I didn't really believe was real at all during the offseason. And then lo and behold, earlier this week, TSN, the insider trading, we hear that, you know, Laine's representatives, you can say that they can say that it's not an official trade demand all they want, but boy, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's probably a duck, and that sure sounds like a trade demand from Patrick Laine to the Winnipeg Jets.
I never understood, guys, why acquiring Paul Stastny would affect the Patrick Laine trade rumors. Like, I understand from the perspective of bringing in, you know, a very quality second line center who Laine has played with, and Ehlers, of course. Mm-hmm. I get it from that perspective, but I don't think that really changes the core of the issue here, right? I think you guys would agree with that. Like, if there has been discussions between Laine's representation and the Jets management, you know, about possibly moving on, and I don't know if you don't call it requesting a trade, and that to me was what was the most surprising about what Pierre LeBrun said, because I think when, you know, insider trading comes out, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, certain nuggets of information, and you thought maybe that Laine would be discussed, but you definitely didn't think, you know, that Laine's agents would tell Pierre LeBrun that the way things are trending are that it looks like, you know, Laine is going to be moved to another team, right? Yeah. Like, that was the significant piece of information. And, you know, LeBrun says that, you know, the Jets and Laine haven't, or pardon me, Laine hasn't requested a trade, but if he hasn't requested a trade, they've obviously talked about a trade, and I don't really know what the difference is there.
I think it's a semantic argument.
Yes.
And I agree wholeheartedly, because if you're, you know, well, he hasn't officially demanded a trade, but he's, you know, both sides are saying it's mutually beneficial that the player would be traded. Well, that's a trade demand.
Exactly.
In my mind.
Right.
I mean, you can call it what you like, and you can have the semantic argument, but that's a trade demand in my book. Let me ask you guys this. I mean, how has it come to this? Patrick Laine was drafted by the Jets. He's been, what, this is going to be his sixth year entering the Winnipeg Jets? Or fifth year entering the Winnipeg Jets? Five. You know, 5 years ago when the Jets fell backwards into the opportunity to draft Patrick Laine, when they won the draft lottery, you thought, I thought, people in Winnipeg thought, this is a player who's going to be a generational goal scorer for this team
for this franchise. It's Solani 2.0. is what it is.
Solani got traded because the new ownership in you know Phoenix at the time demanded that you had to trade either one of Tkachuk or Solani, and they chose to trade Solani over Tkachuk, and you know obviously that wasn't the right decision. But how
Drew,
is it?
Drew, I was just saying that Laine is like the type of player Solani sure. was. I wasn't yeah. even talking about the trade. Like you have a finished sniper.
Yes,
that's all that I meant. But yeah, the trade situations are very different.
Right.
I mean, we don't have to go over that. I mean, guys, the Jets were leaving town. I mean, everybody knew that, unfortunately, back in, what was it, 1995 when he was traded, right? Or was it 96? One of those 2 years. And you know, I realize a lot of Jets fans out there, guys, and we interact with those fans through our social media accounts and through the radio show and everything like that. And, you know, people are starting to discuss, you know, is it really usage? Is it, you know, the management? Is it the coach? I just think it's unfortunate because, like you said, back in 2016, I remember Huss called it St. Patrick's Day when the Jets got that second overall pick, because obviously their chances of getting that second overall pick were not high.
Mm-hmm.
When they got Laine, you're right. I mean, he is a generational player. Craig Button, all the scouts, they were talking about that. Like, you have the opportunity to get players like Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine. The year prior, you had Eichel and McDavid, right? So you don't acquire those types of players. I mean, unless, of course, Laine is traded, then a team might acquire that type of player. But the fact is, you basically set yourself up to make the playoffs for the next 10 years.
When Patrick Laine was drafted by the Jets, if you had told me that within 5 years, the relationship would have gone so sour that he's now, you know, and his representatives are now, you know, requesting a trade, and call it what you like, but I'm going to use that terminology.
That's a bit aggressive. I don't think I would.
Okay, fine. But, you know, suggesting a change of scenery seems more likely than not that a trade is going to be inevitable rather than a contract extension.
Hold on a second, though. I understand what Dave is saying here, but I agree with Drew 100%. And you know, Dave, I hate to agree with Drew all the time, right? I'd rather pick the Manuk side. But, I mean, what is the difference? And, yes, it's not even semantics. It's an assessment of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if Laine, Mike Liut, I forget the name of the other agent.
Andy Scott.
Andy Scott is the other agent. So his two agents, which are Octagon, right? Is it Octagon Hockey? I think they used to be Octagon Hockey. Regardless, whatever the agency is, the two agents from that agency, Liut and Andy Scott, mm-hmm. if they have discussed that with Kevin Cheveldayoff and Jets management, Jets ownership, what is the real difference here? I realize there is a slight difference, but if they've said, you know, actually, we'd be willing to entertain, you know, a trade here. Like, what is the difference between requesting a trade and talking about a trade?
There's no difference.
It's the same thing. If it leads to the same conclusion.
Yeah. If you've expressed your interest that your player, your representative would be better off somewhere else, to me, it's a trade. Now, my question though is, how did they get to this point? How has the relationship turned so sour that this is where we're at in this weird off season that Patrick Laine being traded away from the Winnipeg Jets is a reality at this point in time? I mean, when they drafted Patrick Laine, he should have been a member of the team for 10 to 12 years. You know, he should have been a franchise icon for 10 to 12 years. You get him for the 7 years straight off of the draft, off of the entry-level contract, and then the subsequent contracts before he becomes UFA. He should have been 6 years there, and then you sign him to a 5-year contract extension at that point in time. He should have been a member of this team for a decade. Mm-hmm. How is it that halfway through the decade, we're talking about Patrick Laine no longer being a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I mean, I think the semantics are somewhat important, to be honest with you. I think there are, because I've talked to you, and as everybody knows on the that listens to us, we're very anti-semantic. So, I mean, that's something that we like to focus on. Sorry, that's not mine. That's David Stern, former NBA commissioner. He's that. It's one of my favorite lines in an interview he ever did. But I really think that, you know, and I've talked to Pascal Vincent about this, Manitoba Moose head coach, and he's talked about players wanting more role. And he goes, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. You know, Jack Roslovic wanting a bigger role. And sometimes it says, listen, if I'm not going to get a role on this team, I want that role on another team. But, you know, from a hockey perspective, I just want to point this out. Patrick Laine wanting that, desiring to be that first line right winger is not a bad thing. That's what you want. If I'm Patrick Laine, and if you're a Jets fan, you want Patrick Laine to want that because you want that guy, one of your the best right winger in your organization, to want to be on the top line based on the way for usage, right? So I don't think it's a selfish thing first of all, because I mean, again, you hear this, right? You're seeing what's out there right now, and you see people say, "Oh, well, he's selfish." Well, first of all, he adjusted his game last year to play a different sort of game, a game that the team wanted him to play. And secondly, again, like I said, from a usage perspective, it's not a bad thing. Now, with respect to his agents, I actually think it's a fireable offense what they did. The fact that they would give Pierre LeBrun that comment, if I was lying, I'd fire them, because to me, what you did is you put the player into an untenable situation. What you've done is you've created a firestorm where you didn't need a firestorm. What you did was put the Jets in a weaker position to trade Patrick Laine if that's what you wanted, because now teams know you're up. Because think about it. To Ezzie's point, the Stastny trade last week calmed the waters. So if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, nobody's talking about Patrick. Did anybody talk about trading Patrick Laine this week until the insider trading segment?
Sorry, just to cut you off, Dave, I think Chevy acquired Stastny to improve the second line center position.
Okay, that's so
right. I don't think Chevy was, and again, I don't know this, I can't speak for him, but to me, I don't think the main reason why you acquired him was to make to so Patrick Laine is happy.
But
it works hand in hand.
Yes, exactly.
It works hand in hand that you've improved your team, and you know, to Dave's point, you know, Patrick Laine should be playing first line right, you know, right side minutes. So that if that means Paul Stastny and Blake Wheeler play together on the quote unquote second line, so be it.
That might be the case, but GMs don't make moves to make one player on the team happy. Come on.
They should.
At some point in time. Fine. Let's go with your logic, Ez, and say that that's not the reason he did that. Okay. He just did it to improve his center depth. Fine. The point I'm making is that go on the premise that, like you said, that they didn't do it just to make Patrick Laine happy. Again, if you're Cheveldayoff, you now have an opportunity to speak in a very non-turbulent way with the rest of the GMs in the league, and you don't feel like you have your feet to the fire, and you think, okay, I've got to trade this player. But then, again, LeBrun checks in with his agents. His agents say, all good here. An agent can lie to media. They do all the time.
I agree with you.
The reality is,
I was just going to say, you know, they are definitely confusing the situation here. Or maybe confusing is the wrong word. They're complicating the situation because now they've made it, it's public now. I mean, before it was speculation, and then there was some truth to these rumors, and now the agents are basically saying, and I agree with you, why, if I'm Mike Liute and I'm Andy Scott, why am I even talking to LeBrun publicly?
Well, because they want to. I understand what from their logic, it is you put it out in the public, it adds more pressure on Kevin Cheveldayoff to make a trade, even a bad trade. They misplayed the situation, I think, to Dave's point, because they don't really, if they believe that, they don't know Kevin Cheveldayoff, they don't know his reputation, they don't know, you know, how many years did Evander Kane ask for a trade before Cheveldayoff finally made the trade?
And I guess the way I would sum up my point to what his agents have done is, again, you've created a story where, again, we catalog every morning the papers. There's nothing about Laine for the last week. Right? It's all about Jet signings, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it hasn't been anything about Laine. And now all of a sudden, every single news article in today's morning papers, with the exception of one, I think, is about Laine and all of this. So what I'm saying is you've created a firestorm needlessly, and it's twofold. Because the reality is, whenever this next season gets going, what do you think every question to Patrick Laine is going to be?
Are you happy to be here?
Do you want to be here?
Why did you ask for a trade?
So all I'm saying is you've created a situation for your player that, to me, is less than ideal, and I don't understand. Again,
you've put people in a corner.
That's right.
Really, right? And you know what I think is maybe the most unfortunate about this, guys, is, you know, Dave just mentioned the timing, right? Like, so most of the big UFAs are off the board, right? Like, you have some significant guys, which are, you know, if you ask me, I'm pretty surprised a guy like Mike Hoffman is still unsigned. You have guys like Mikael Granlund, Sammy Vatanen, but not, you know, la creme de la creme, right? Like, you have a list of guys that are looking for their, you know, next big contract, but they might not get it because of salary cap constraints, right? So, you know, the reason why I think that the timing here is interesting is because if you're the Jets and Chevy and, you know, a trade has been discussed between the two sides, I mean, what's your rush here? Like Dave just mentioned it, the earliest the season's going to start is January, early January. It might be mid-January. The season might not start until February. Like, we don't know. Nobody knows. Gary Bettman is hopeful that it's January. The owners are hopeful, obviously, that it's January, but I don't see a rush here to trade Laine. And we know that this is going to be a trade that is going to impact and shape the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Because as you mentioned, I agree with you 100%. When the Jets got that pick and selected Laine second overall. At no point, no point were you ever thinking we're going to be talking about a trade 4 years from now, 5 years from now, 6 years from now. You just, that would never even cross your mind.
It wouldn't, because it shouldn't, because you've acquired a generational talent. And all of a sudden, the fact that you have to trade that generational talent, one of the greatest goal scorers currently in the NHL, and you have to trade him at the, you know, 5 year mark, that to me screams that there's a problem.
Well, I mean,
and that there's a problem not necessarily with the player specifically, but a problem with the organization.
But again, the one thing you're failing to take into account is you don't know what he's told the Jets behind the scenes. So the reality is, if Patrick Laine says, I have zero intention of signing a long-term deal in Winnipeg, I'm not going to make it public, but I have zero intention, mm-hmm. Well, then then the Jets have to do something about it. So I'm just saying that there are five. Like, you know, it's easy to say without perfect information and make these grandiose statements. I'm simply suggesting that, you know, we got to be a little bit careful because we don't know what he has communicated to the team in terms of his intentions as from long term. Now, look, there are, you know, people are like, oh, Winnipeg sucks, like blah, blah, blah. And again, I wrote about it in the papers. Scheifele, Wheeler, Morrissey, Ehlers,
Hellebuck,
DeMello. Yep. You've got six players that we just named off. Kyle Connor.
If people think that this is about, you know, the Jets organization not being a great organization or the city of Winnipeg not being a great city, this is not what it's about.
I disagree with you entirely, Ezra. I do think
Winnipeg's a great city?
Winnipeg's a great city, but I do think this is about the Winnipeg Jets organization. And that is the part that needs to be examined by the Winnipeg Jets organization. They need to find out what is the problem with their organization that certain players are jumping ship and demanding to jump ship earlier than you would quote-unquote expect. Why? And I know people, you know, and I went back to last year with Dustin Byfuglien. I know people are saying... As an organization, it is incumbent on the organization to know what is going on with their assets, with their players. So if they think that it's a possible... The fact that it came as an out-of-the-blue shock to them that Dustin Byfuglien retired or up and left the team when he did at the start of training camp... That is a failure on the organization for not knowing and not having clear lines of communication, open lines of communication with their assets. As an employer, it is incumbent upon you, especially when you're paying people millions upon millions of dollars, it is incumbent upon you as an organization to know how those people are feeling, what their mindset is, what they're happy about, what they're angry about, and to rectify those issues before they up and pull the magic carpet out on you when you're least expecting
it. You know
what?
You can have that opinion. This is the thing. First off, these situations are very different, and Evander Kane is a completely different situation as well, because we know the whole history there with Evander Kane and the Jets, and he was a young player, and they won that trade, by the way. I mean, they won that trade handily. So when you're talking about Dustin Byfuglien and you know, the Jets' inability to maybe figure out how they can retain that player... We don't know that part of the story. Dave just mentioned that. If Patrick Laine is unhappy because of his usage, that is selfish.
And I disagree entirely.
I'm not saying you think that if you don't get your way, you should be able to demand a trade.
I think that the players have all the leverage when it comes to where they want to, you know, teams have the leverage to start. And then as you get closer to year 5 and year 6 and year 7, the players get that leverage. And it's incumbent on the organization to know that. And so that if this is at its root a usage issue where the better player, Patrick Laine, because he is a better player than Blake Wheeler right now, if he's not getting the minutes that he deserves and he's not getting the usage that he deserves and he's not getting the role that he deserves, and that there is some sort of conflict within the organization better damn well figure out how to resolve that conflict before it gets to year 5, year 6, and year 7, where the player can say, guess what, I now have you between the rock and a hard place, and you're in trouble. And that's where the Jets seem to have failed in this instance right now, is that you have a player who should have been a generational player for a decade or longer, and for whatever reason, they have managed to mishandle the situation.
I don't know necessarily that it's just as easy as mishandling the situation, because you don't know what has gone on between Lyonnais' camp and the Jets. You're assuming a lot of things.
I'm giving my opinion based on the evidence that I know, and that's all I'm speaking about, the evidence that is that is out in the public realm. I don't have any behind-the-scenes knowledge about...
Well, nobody does, Drew.
Right, I know. I'm just giving my opinion.
Nobody knows what's going on behind the scenes.
I know.
And that's why it's so frustrating for Jets fans, because it's one... And you know, I agree with you that if it's pure skill, if you're putting Lyonnais up against Wheeler, considering their age and their skill set, nobody's going to disagree that Lyonnais should be on the first line. That's not what this is about. I mean, it might be what it's about for Lyonnais, but nobody's going to fault him for that. That's not selfish. That's him wanting to be on the top line. He's a great player. He deserves to be on that top line. You have Blake Wheeler, who has sacrificed everything and given everything for this organization. He's on that top line with Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor. And people could not like that, and they could say, I'd rather see Ehlers, Scheifele, and Lyonnais, and I would be one of those people, because I think Ehlers and Lyonnais are the two most skilled wingers on the team, and that includes Kyle Connor. But the point is here, you can't just... If you have put the Jets in a situation where you're saying, I will not sign long-term, I'm not happy, I want to play with Mark Scheifele, or you have to trade me, then how is that an organizational failure?
It should never get to that point. That is where the failure comes in from my perspective, is it should never get to the point where where the player is issuing ultimatums and the player is using that leverage onto the organization.
I disagree. And again, I know we're up against the break, but the reality is for me, and like I said off the top of my answer before, which is what Pascal Vincent says, you want guys who want to play the most minutes, who want to be the best players they can be. And again, we can go through a litany of players who have all wanted more. And wanting more isn't, to Ezzie's point, isn't a bad thing. Again, to me, the biggest mistake made this entire week was by his representation, making this public, making this something that we're talking about. Because it could very easily have been handled quietly and behind the scenes. You didn't need to drop a bomb and upset the hornet's nest. And to me, that was the biggest failure the entire week.
When we come back, more on the Patrick Lyonnais trade discussions. We're focused on the Jets, and we want to hear from you. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I spoke to Kevin Shoveldayoff on this day, and he reiterated that he's looking at all options when it comes to trade, and that Patrick Lyonnais remains a big part of the organization. What I would say, not Shoveldayoff, is that he's not going to just trade Patrick Lyonnais for the sake of it, that it's going to have to be something that makes sense for the Winnipeg Jets. But I will say this, as Andy Scott, the agent for Patrick Lyonnais, said to me, there is a clear understanding between both sides about where this is probably headed.
More from the LeBrun shell earlier this week, putting the Jets offseason on its head. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzie. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth tooting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Want to hear from you about this? We have our Illegal Curve question of the day, in which we ask, who is to blame, if anyone, for Patrick Lyonnais being disgruntled with the Jets organization? That's our words. That's my words. Maybe he wouldn't use the same phrasing. Maybe the Jets organization wouldn't use the same phrasing, but that's the phrasing that I'm choosing to use. Who, if anyone, is to blame for Patrick Lyonnais being disgruntled with the Jets organization? Send us your text, 129090. Send us your tweets, at Illegal Curve. We might read them on air. You'll see. We'll see over the next 2 hours and 35 minutes. Let me ask you guys this. You know, a lot of talk about the Jets organization, and the responsibility that they hold or don't hold when it comes to the Patrick Lyonnais saga right now. Mm-hmm. Are the Jets as an organization mishandling some of their assets? Is this an organizational problem, as I said in the first segment, that I believe there is something, you know, for lack of a better term, I'm going to use the term rotten within the Jets organization that is resulting in all of these, what I'll describe as younger players, players who are closer to the start of the career than they are the end of their career, being unhappy with the Jets organization?
Well, I mean, to me, again, you're always going to have guys who are going to want more. So from a Are players satisfied with the Jets organization overall? I would think the answer is probably yes, because like I outlined in the last segment, how many guys have signed long-term contracts to play here? How many guys who aren't Canadian? You know, look at all these American guys, Hellebuck, Connor, Wheeler, who have decided to make Winnipeg their home. So you've got, you know, the vast majority of players seem to be willing to sign and play for this organization. And again, are you getting the big name UFAs? No, but how often do those big name UFA deals really work anyways? So that's not the big deal. No, I know what you're getting at, Drew, but I'm just saying overall, again, is it an organizational flaw that players want more usage, want to improve their usage? No, because like, I don't know that, like, look, I don't know that it's the organization. You could say it's Paul Maurice's fault.
Fine. Let's okay, narrow it down. I'm okay with that.
But I'm just saying, you have to be very narrow, I think, in your scope. I don't think that you can say that this is Mark Chipman's fault. I don't know that you can say that, because I would hope that Mark Chipman isn't deciding how players are being used in the lineup. Right? He's the owner.
Right.
He can help make decisions about the roster. But, I mean, again, at the end of the day, you know, overall roster.
Yeah.
I mean,
the financial allocation.
But again, so is it an organizational failure or would it be the coaching failure?
Okay,
to your point. I'm just saying, like, I think our scope has to be narrow.
Is it a coaching failure? Let's go brass tacks. Let's get down to, is Paul.
He does hold some. I absolutely do. And I agree with Dave. I don't think, like, first off, we're talking really about two players here in terms of demanding or discussing trades. I mean, I know that Pierre LeBrun said that through Mike Liut and Andy Scott, they haven't requested a trade. But to me,
we know
it's as close as you can get to requesting a trade without requesting a trade. Put it that way. Okay. So if you're talking about Jacob Trouba and Patrick Laine, again, very different situations.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there was a trade requested. This is a fact.
Right.
This is not fake news. I mean, this is a fact that Jacob Trouba and, who's his agent?
Kurt Overhart.
They requested a trade. So that's on the record.
And let me point out, let me interrupt there. You know, a lot of people, you know, tweeting at us, well, he was never going to sign here because, you know, his girlfriend or his fiance, whatever they are, is in med school or is going to be a doctor in the States. And that's legitimate. But that didn't happen when he made the trade demand. You remember he made the trade demand way earlier in his career before the talk of signing a long-term deal came.
And what you didn't just mention there is that the big thing was usage, right? Because at the time, Trouba wasn't getting those power play minutes and he wasn't maybe necessarily, you know, being put in those opportunities where his stats could be the best. Let's go back though, go back to 2018, the Jets' incredible run against the Vegas Golden Knights. They almost get to the Stanley Cup final. The Jets were the sexy pick the next year to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost have to ask yourself, like, what has gone wrong, you know, in those 2 years?
The better question
two
is,
and a half years.
What has gone right in those 2.5 years? Because a lot has gone wrong. Well, very little has gone right.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you have to look at, you know, certain moves that were made. You have to look at, you know, it's partly losing Dustin Byfuglien. It's, you know, partly losing guys like Tyler Myers and Ben Sherrod on the back end. I don't care what you say. I mean, the Jets defense was completely decimated. So it's not just Buff. It's not just Trouba. They lost four key guys to their defense. The Brian Little injury is huge, and it's not just this year. I mean, he's been injured a couple of years ago as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we know the Jets tried to sign Stastny, who went to Vegas. Like, it's not like one thing or two things happened here, but yes, I think that Paul Maurice probably has been hesitant to break up that Connor Scheifele-Wheeler line a little bit too much, and that would probably mean a guy like Patrick Laine getting elevated to that top line, or a guy like Nikolai Ehlers getting elevated to that top line, that first power play unit. We've talked about that. So I do think Paul Maurice probably has some blame in this, in terms of maybe how he hasn't maybe relied on Patrick Laine a little bit more, but he is still a young player. So you have to look at it from both sides, right?
You got it. The young player argument has to be done by at this point in time. Paul Maurice, if you don't want to say the organization is at fault, and that's fine, Dave. I can listen to that, your point of view there. Paul Maurice has to wear the blame for this then. He has to wear the blame for his usage decisions, for his reluctance or his refusal to elevate his best player to his best possible position. This is a fundamental problem that seems to start behind the bench for the Winnipeg Jets organization. And I don't know how that's going to rectify with the current scenario. I just don't. More on this later. Much more on Laine, much more on the Jets. Murat Atesh of The Athletic is going to join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. We want to hear from you at Illegal Curve via Twitter. The tweets are flying fast and furious. We'll read some of them on the air throughout the course of the show. And of course, you can reach us via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And for all the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, and there's a whole bunch of it, check us out at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, we're pleased to be joined by our good friend Murat Atesh to talk more about the Jets, more about Patrick Laine. Murat, good morning. How are you, and what is the choice of cartoon this Saturday morning?
Good morning. I'm doing quite well. I'll admit I haven't fired up the cartoons quite yet. The focus is 100% on you guys, but I will throw out a shout out to one of my guilty pleasures from youth, a show called Clone High.
Clone High. Okay, I'm unfamiliar with that, but certainly something to, I'm sure my kids can get into at some point in time. Murat, appreciate you joining us on this this Saturday morning. Obviously, the talk all week long, sort of since Pierre LeBrun's report earlier in the week, has been about Patrick Laine and the trade. Don't call it a demand. You know, I guess sort of a general thought to start. How has it come to this point where Patrick Laine, a player who should have been a generational talent for the Winnipeg Jets, is asking for a trade, you know, 5 years into his time in the NHL?
Well, yeah, this is certainly an interesting situation. And Pierre LeBrun dropping essentially, you know, a bit of a news or a rumor bomb the other day, because I think a lot of us assumed, and I'm not sure how you guys felt about this, but a lot of us assumed that the acquisition of Paul Stastny would make Patrick Laine comfortable, because all of this talk about line mates, opportunity, all of these things that we've heard for, you know, about a year at least from Patrick Laine were about to be resolved. There was no way he was going to be able to play a full season without being alongside Paul Stastny or Mark Scheifele. There's a lot of reasons to think that that would look like good offense for Laine. A big contract coming up after that. It seemed like everything was resolved, and then to hear that his agents are saying, well, no, a trade would still be mutually beneficial, which is the most polite trade request you've ever heard, I'm sure. It's remarkable. And how it got to this point, you know what, is I'm not even sure the degree to which his you know, discontent would be rooted. I take this as a friendly nudge from the agents to Kevin Cheveldayoff, saying, hey, you know what, we know that you got Paul Stastny, and we know that there are two top centers now, but, you know, our client still feels this way. And that's, I mean, that's a fascinating, compelling and story for Jets fans. And I have to say, I feel for them really deep down. I think it's tough on Jets fans.
I agree with you. And at the end of the day, you know, it really is about that it's just disappointing that it's at this point, and it looks like there's a good chance that he will be traded. I agree with you, Murat, and I think you would agree that there is a lot of this part of the story that we don't know about. What's happening behind closed doors with Patrick Laine's representation, with Kevin Cheveldayoff, with Paul Maurice, but just sticking with usage. And I realize that you know, you put some of those numbers out there in terms of even strength ice time on the first line versus the second line, and in your opinion, is that something, does Laine have a good point here when you consider how skilled he is, how good of a goal scorer he is, how he's improved his two-way game? Like, does he deserve to get more minutes? Does he deserve to have that quote-unquote, you know, undisputed number one spot on that first line?
I think that we're getting to that point now as opposed to it being the case for the last 4 years. And so I would understand frustration on his part. I really would, because he's the sort of player, he wants to be the best in the world someday. He said that since he was a teenager. I heard folks in Finland tell me that about him when I went there in 2018. Ever since he was a kid and a teenager, and even as an adult now, he wants to be the best. He wants to have the best line mates, the most minutes, all of those sorts of things. And he hasn't had that throughout his NHL career. Is that a problem in terms of if you're running the Jets? I'm not sure, because he's averaged second line equivalent minutes since he was a teenager, plus power play time, which I think is a solid amount of ice time for an 18 to 22 year old. And then this past season was able to play something closer to top line minutes, playing mostly with Mark Scheifele after the Brian Little injury sort of forced the Jets' hand to rearrange their lines. I can understand if he's thinking to himself, well, you know what, I would have been on the second line if not for that injury. I can understand if he's thinking, well, hey, they took me off the top power play unit for a little bit there as well. So I would definitely understand frustration, certainly because I also feel like, you know, he's made comments about wanting to play with Scheifele and not having chemistry with Little on the second line, all of these sorts of things. But I also think that he's an adult male, 22 years old, could probably look at the situation in front of him, and his line mates are, or sorry, line, his minutes are progressively going up. It doesn't seem like it should be a point of no return issue for me at this stage of his career.
So, Murad, I was going to ask you about the path to building a winner in Winnipeg, because you wrote about that 2 days ago, which seems like a lifetime ago. But, you know, on that idea, can you still do that? I mean, obviously, you're going to, if you have to trade Patrick Laine, you're going to get some assets back. But on your vision of building a winner in Winnipeg, maybe you can expand on that for our listeners and what you think is the best path forward for this Winnipeg Jets organization.
Yeah, I'll start with saying that the best path forward doesn't involve a Patrick Laine trade. I think that the strongest play for the Jets, and even for Laine as well, would be to play a healthy, happy season this year in Winnipeg. I don't think that they're absolutely forced to trade him just because his agents made a fairly strong statement through Pierre LeBrun. I think there's a tremendous amount of value in looking at his opportunity playing with at least Paul Stastny, maybe even Mark Scheifele, a strong center with offensive capabilities all season long, the best center partner that he would have had since Paul Stastny in 2017-18. And I think that if you're Patrick Laine, this is a great season to make hay, increase your contract value, increase your trade value, whatever it is that you're, what you really want deep down. Winnipeg's a good situation for that this year. That said, so looking at these ways towards returning Winnipeg to a winner, I don't have a Patrick Laine trade in there. I don't have Winnipeg Jets standing pat either, because I see a hole at top four left defenseman right now. And I know that the Jets, you know, they have signed Derek Forbert. There is the possibility that Dylan Sandberg or maybe even Ville Heinola takes a big step forward. But you're looking at Forbert, a player who played top 4 minutes a few seasons ago, largely with Drew Doughty, pardon me, who is just a defenseman of a quality that Winnipeg doesn't have. And then you have Dylan Sandberg, hasn't played in the NHL yet. You have Ville Heinola, a 19-year-old, still developing. All of those are maybes. You know, you could put some confidence in any one of them, but all of them are maybes. And I think Winnipeg, by acquiring Paul Stastny, by signing depth like Nathan Beaulieu or Nate Thompson or what have you, they're looking to build a well-rounded team. And that one spot that, you know, is still not a strength is top four defense. And I think that that's the next play for the Jets. And then to finish that thought, I think a lot of us believe that Jack Roslovic is the odd man out. Not because Winnipeg doesn't have cap room for him right now. I know Winnipeg's cap room is just about maxed, but moving Brian Little to long-term injury should free up enough relief pool that you could sign Roslovic and Jansen Harkins as well, and then there's your team. I still think that change of scenery for Roslovic is probably the path that the Jets would most ideally use to getting that top four left defenseman. And I think a trade of that nature, as opposed to Line A Ehlers or any of the, you know, closer to star level players, is Winnipeg's best path towards competing now and for the 4 years that Scheifele, Wheeler, Hellebuck, and also Dylan DeMello are under contract.
Murad Attash is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Murad, you referenced the possibility of a Jack Roslovic trade, and that certainly has picked up steam over the last week or 2 weeks. That almost seems to be inevitable. You factor in, you know, Jacob Trouba being traded a few years ago. Obviously now Patrick Laine and his desire to be traded by all, you know, reports to that effect. You know, if you're the Jets and you're trading all these first round picks, and you're allegedly a draft and develop team, well, what are you if you have to trade all the draft picks you're trying to develop?
Well, yeah, and I understand that perspective. And gosh, if you're a Jets fan right now and you're looking at this and thinking, well, not again. I mean, I understand that frustration. I can even, you know, I can do the mental gymnastics to say, well, okay, you know, I see how Jack Roslovic has been buried behind star players and he's had, you know, concerns about his minutes and usage as well. which makes sense to me because I don't think you would play him above Laine or Wheeler as a right wing necessarily, or give him a second line center spot at this stage of his development. I think that's fair. Dustin Byfuglien's situation is his own. Jacob Trouba, I mean, that has been clear since he was a very young player wanting to play in the States. And all of these separate from each other seem like, okay, well, that kind of makes sense as a one-off. You add them all together, and whether you're a Jets fan or an observer of any kind, and it's hard not to see a pattern there. So I think the optics have begun to look like the exact concern that you're kind of outlining in that question. And whether there's anything systemic that's leading to this, you know, anything insidious at all or not, I think it kind of behooves the Jets organization to look at this and say, well, this is how we're going to be perceived because this is, you know, our history, whether they're related to each other or not. And that might take some addressing, whether it's, you know, internally, externally, in terms of how perception is sort of plays out, because now we're here and we've seen all of these things, and whether they're related or not, I think people are going to treat them like a pattern.
You know, just getting off Patrick Laine for a second, and I think you'd agree it's pretty tough right now because we could probably talk to you about this for an hour here, but I know you want to get to those cartoons, so we'll wrap it up here, Bharat. But, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the two defensemen that were mentioned earlier, Dylan Samberg, Ville Heinola, this is obviously the burning question here in addition to the questions about players like Laine and Roslovic. But, you know, putting you on the spot here a little bit, but if you had to, you know, maybe guess or give your opinion on which one of those two defensemen will play more of a significant role in the upcoming season, whether that starts in you know, January or February, whatever that season looks like. I mean, who do you think has a better shot at playing significant minutes? Whether that's on the second pair, third pair, you know, doesn't really matter at this point. Would that be Heinola or would that be Samberg? Because I kind of go back and forth between this in my own head quite a bit. So who kind of has that inside track, in your opinion?
For me, just my opinion, it's Dylan Samberg, and the reasons I go for him in this case are twofold. Age, on one hand, certainly he's you know, a little bit older, he's a little bit bigger, a little bit better developed, I think, than the Heinola at this stage of the game. He's a more mature prospect. And another issue that he's sort of facing that Ville Heinola isn't would be a place to play, essentially. We don't necessarily know the full future of the AHL at this stage, which I think would be the most ideal landing spot for him, at least for a few games, to sort of ramp up. Meanwhile, in Finland, Ville Heinola is playing top 4 minutes for the first true time over there. He's getting all kinds of opportunity, strong possession numbers. He's playing, you know, one of the biggest roles of his life so far and doing well. So if I'm the Winnipeg Jets and I have room for one and it's a coin flip at all, well, I think, okay, Ville Heinola is doing really well in Finland. That's a really nice landing spot for him. Let's keep Dylan Samberg close by and monitor his development as well. But I also do think that age and size and all those sorts of things give him an inside track.
Well, Murat Attash covers the Winnipeg Jets for TheAthletic.com. Murat, always appreciate your time and insight from one set of cartoon characters. We'll let you get back to the cartoon characters on your television. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care, Murat. When we come back, we discuss more on Patrick Laine. What does a trade, an effective trade, an acceptable trade look like? Want to hear from you, of course. Much more on the Jets and Laine. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Connor will send it into the St. Louis zone. Sends it for Little. The Laine scores! Byfuglien down to Wheeler. Great job. Back to Laine again. Scores! Little to carry it down the ice. Cross the line with Lemieux. Laine scores! Patrick Laine has the hat trick. Turned over in front of the net. Laine scores! Patrick Laine on the turnover has his fourth. Laine's alone in front. Scores! Patrick Laine has goal number five.
5-goal games grow on trees, so you got to trade the guy who gets a 5-goal game. You can't keep that guy around. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Being a little snarky there, admittedly. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you on this Saturday morning. You're live on TSN Radio 1290. The segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at ZappiaGroup.com.
Now, we have to mention that, you know, that 5-goal game, we have to give a shout-out to our good friend Hartsey. That was the day of his wet. I'll never forget that because I'm pretty sure. Was that not an afternoon game?
No, it wasn't. It was a night game.
It was a bit early, though, because
it was a 6 o'clock Saturday start.
I believe it was a 6 o'clock Saturday?
Yeah,
okay, I'll take your word for it.
Because it was, I think he had scored his fourth goal, and I was supposed to be leaving for the wedding or the party or whatever it was. And I remember just sitting there going, like, I can't leave. Keep scoring. I got to add this to the website.
I remember he scored the hat trick on our way to the wedding, and then he scored another one and another
one. You're so nice. You went early. I had seen four goals. And then when he scored the fifth, I was like, someone just wanted a million.
Fashionably late.
That's true, too. But someone wanted a million. So I remember I was on.
Do you remember that name?
I don't remember who it was. He was a pastor. I don't remember his name, though. I have it on the website. But anyways, I remember I stopped on Corden and, like, Lindsay on the way to the Assiniboine Park to update the website and make sure that it was had the freshest content.
Well, I'll tell you what, your dedication to our audience, Dave, is unmatched. Obviously, we're talking about Patrick Laine. We're talking about the trade demand. Don't call it a trade demand, whatever you want to call it. You know, and now we're at the point where the Jets have to try and figure out a way to salvage this situation. So let me ask you guys, starting with
this, they don't have to do anything.
Well, fine. I mean, they're not obligated to do anything.
They have 3 years of team control on this player.
They do. Do you think this relationship can be salvaged, or is it a foregone conclusion?
No, to be honest,
Christopher Haley.
There you go. And again, like I said, I think that, you know, whether his agents are looking at it and saying, hey, you know what? We're not going to be able to get, because of the cap situation, with the way the Jets' cap structure is, we may not get $10 million for this guy a season for 8 years, whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
So maybe they're trying to get a lay of the land. Maybe they're trying to do this. Again, I don't know, but I just see a player who, you know, I've got it on today's morning papers.
Yeah.
He plays paper, rock, scissors with the fans. Like, this is a guy, to Ezzie's point, and I think he said this off air, he's beloved in this city. So you can say whatever you want about Patrick Laine. He is a guy who, he's not aloof. You know, he might be aloof with the media. I mean, I find him a little bit funny, but aloof in the sense that he's reserved. He's not providing his deepest, innermost, but he can be candid as well. I'm simply suggesting that here's a guy who, you know, when everybody else is, you know, not really necessarily paying attention to the fans, he's giving the fans that interaction that they want. This is a guy who, again,
yeah, the Winnipeg is good article.
Sure.
Which, I mean, he didn't write it. Let's all just calm down whenever we got people texting and tweeting at us saying he wrote the Winnipeg is good article. He did not write it. Somebody wrote it on his behalf and put his signature on it.
Yeah.
So again, take all those kind of things with a pretty hefty grain of salt.
The point I was trying to make, though, is that I think these relationships, we don't know. We get emails, we get texts, we get DMs all the time about, like, people with inside knowledge.
My dog
about,
catcher's third
no,
cousin.
But I'm just saying in terms of what you know might be going on behind the scenes. But the reality is that we don't know officially. We're not there. So it's all speculation at this point. And what I would suggest, again, is I don't know that it's gone past that point where it can be salvaged. I'm personally of the opinion that, you know, you've got that right core. I mean, to what Murat said in the last segment, here's an opportunity for Winnipeg, A, because you're not going to get a better player than Patrick Laine. You're not going to get a guy who's going to be a bigger contributor to your team. So you know already you're going to lose from that perspective. Now, can you augment your – like, look, again, Jets fans, 1.0, Solani for Teberdovsky and Kilgour, it's not going to happen. You know, so the reality is, I'm just saying, you're not going to get someone who's going to have the impact on your roster that you need. And the reality is, again, you don't need to trade the player. So can you, by giving him what he wants, again, you don't want to say you have a gun to his head. I know you, Drew, were talking about how players have more control, right?
They do.
But you don't want to be, you like, again, to me, Laine's forced himself into that conversation, right? So by doing the right things, by doing the things the organizations wanted him to do. So you put Laine with Ehlers and Scheifele. You put Wheeler with Stasny and Connor, or any sort of variation of all of those. And I think you've got a recipe. You've got a twofold recipe. And this is why Laine's agents, to me, should be shutting up and not talking. If a media person calls them, no comment. And the craziest part is, to be honest with you, is if they wanted to offer that without saying it publicly, that's one thing. But to be that bombish of it, I think was, because, and the last point I will make is, because I think you, Laine, next year, on a Jets team that has a much better top six, you know, with Paul Stasny, we would all agree, a better distributor, Laine's numbers, even if he plays with Stasny and Ehlers, are going to go up. So the reality is your client is going to make more money under next year's configuration, most likely, than he would right now.
And I realize that, you know, the whole point of this conversation was, and we're up against the break here, but, you know, the point was to kind of, you know, we can talk about this a little bit later maybe, but, you know, to talk about, you know, potential, you know, trade destinations or, you know, who the Jets might get in return. And really, if you think about it, it's almost a, you know, a futile exercise because, you know, it's almost impossible to find a player of equal value for Patrick Laine. We've talked about it, unless it's like Jack Eichel or Seth Jones or somebody like that. But the, I think what Dave...
That ship has sailed, by the way, my opinion. Well, when we talked about it, you know, months ago before, you know, it became as public as it has, mm-hmm. when we talked about the possibility of an ideal and what it might look like, we said that it would have to be superstar for superstar. From the position the Jets are in right now, I don't think that they'd be able to get a superstar in return for Patrick Laine.
Yeah, it's quite possible. And, you know, I think, though, you know, Murat talked about it as well. I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion that Laine is going to be traded. I really believe that. And just because this report comes out from Pierre LeBrun, everyone's starting to talk about, you know, maybe Laine is going to be traded to Carolina, or maybe he's going to be traded to Philadelphia. I agree with Dave here. I think there is time here because the season isn't going to start for at least 2.5 months. I think there is time here to mend, you know, this situation. And with the acquisitions the Jets have made, namely Paul Stastny, re-signing Dylan DeMello, bringing in some depth guys like, you know, Derek Forbort and Nate Thompson, I think there is time, and I wouldn't just rush to think that, you know, Laine is going to be traded in the next week or next month. I think this is a situation that's ongoing. Right now, it doesn't look very good. It looks like there's a good chance that, you know, he could be moved. But that's all I'm going to say. I'm not expecting, you know, with 100% certainty that Laine is going to be traded, you know, this year.
When we come back, Jeff O'Neill from TSN 1050 Overdrive, the O-Dog, is going to join us. He's a guy who played for Paul Maurice, so we can talk about that with Jeff, look around the NHL at everything that's happened in the course of free agency and acquisitions. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more Winnipeg Jets talk upcoming on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates will apply. And, of course, our websites with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We're working to get a hold of Jeff O'Neill from TSN 1050 Overdrive, the O-Dog. Hopefully going to jump on the line and join us in a couple minutes to talk about everything Winnipeg Jets related, everything going around the NHL. Of course, the biggest news, that being of Patrick Laine and his agents suggesting, of course, that Laine would be better off not with the Winnipeg Jets, and the two sides should go their separate ways. I think we have Jeff O'Neill, so let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN 1050 in Toronto, you listen to Overdrive, you watch it on TSN TV. Jeff O'Neill joins us on the line. Jeff, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
How you doing, guys? How's things out there in Winnipeg with all this Laine business?
If you can believe it, Jeff, the people are a little bit upset. They're a little bit heated. Everyone's got an opinion. Sometimes people have more than one opinion on the same topic. We want to obviously hear from you about this.
Where does being upset, like, what is it directed at? Is it the player, the organization? Like, where is the anger coming from?
That's a great question. There's a lot of people who are upset with the player, and there's certainly a vocal group of people, and I'm not even going to say minority because I can't say that with any certainty, but there's a lot of people who are upset with the Winnipeg Jets organization who think that there is a pattern at play here when it comes to maybe first-round draft picks not wanting to make a long-term commitment to the city of Winnipeg or to the Jets organization. And people want to know why, and I certainly fall under that category. When you have Laine, you know, 5 years into his stint here in Winnipeg, where the guy should be a generational player, and you have guys like, you know, Jacob Trouba, another former first-round pick, Jack Roslovic, another former first-round pick, who sounds like he's more likely to be exiting Winnipeg than staying here long-term, that you want to know why things aren't going well for the organization. And let me ask you, having been around the NHL for so long, having been within organizations, some good, some less than good, you know, when you see players exiting stage right, you know, especially first round picks on a semi-regular basis. What does that say to you?
Well, first of all, as far as the Line A situation goes, there's a lot of layers to this, as I'm sure you're aware of. But if you want to get to the first part of people exiting stage left or however you want to describe it, we are living in a world now where players at a young age can just wake up one morning and say, I don't want to play here, I don't want to play there. It happened way back in the day when Eric Lindros, for whatever reason, it was his own reason, said, I am not going to play for the Quebec Nordiques, and that's just that. But I can understand the frustration in the market where it's just like in Ottawa, where you're like, you get these homegrown talents, you draft them, you develop them, you ultimately have to pay them a lot of money, and then whatever reason, the organization or the ownership says, we can't afford to pay this. So it's just like it's a dangerous cycle where every time you draft a guy and it ends up coming to payday, then all of a sudden the player leaves, and it's like, what kind of vicious cycle are we in here? So I can understand that frustration. As far as the player, it's, you could tell that Patrick Laine is a bit of a different guy. He seems to go to his own, he beats to his own drum. And I think that in that culture, in that locker room, it's Scheifele and Wheeler. And, you know, you could throw Connor in there as kind of the makeup of that locker room. And I personally don't think that he really jives with those three guys. I think he wants to play with two of the three. And I just don't think that's going to happen. And I said it on our show a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, man, you're going to get rid of Patrick Laine? I mean, they're talking, they had something on SportsCenter this morning. Since 2016-17, he's like seventh in the league in goals scored. How the hell are you ever going to replace that? And then I heard Sarah Oleski on SportsCenter, and she said, well, they're not going to move him unless they get elite talent back. So I don't know who the hell you can get and have fair market trade value for Patrick Laine. You better get a stud defenseman of some sort. Like, you're not going to get a top seven since 2016 in goal scoring to replace it, so I don't know how you could ever get fair market value. And who knows what this guy's going to turn into in the next 3 or 4 years. I know there was some inconsistency last year, but I don't know. I think it's a dangerous game. But if the player says, look, I think it's in the best interest for both parties, that basically means he wants out. And the last thing you want in pro sports right now is a guy in the locker room that's not happy being there.
Let me ask you, Jeff, you know, going into the locker room, you know, no, that was a great answer. Don't be apologizing for anything there. When you have maybe, for lack of a better term, I'm going to use factions. So you have, you know, you mentioned Wheeler and Scheifele. We know that those guys are wired in a certain way.
Yeah.
And then you have other guys who might be, you know, have a different makeup and a different approach to the game that isn't the same as a Scheifele and a Wheeler. You know, is it incumbent on one of those groups to maybe, you know, throw an olive branch to the other group? If you had to lay blame, you know, where does that blame lie? Does it lie with Paul Maurice and his inability to get everybody on the same page? Does it lie with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele not being able to understand that, you know, every player might have a different approach to the game? You know,
yeah, that is.
How do you make it? Sorry, go ahead.
That is a great question, because you got to be thinking to yourself, it's so, like, this team 2 years ago was regarded as the top five team in the league to try to win the Stanley Cup, and all you want to do, and I lived in the same world. I was in a situation where I was in Carolina, I was 22 years old, and I kind of lived my own life, and wasn't the same as Gary Roberts, it wasn't the same as Rod Brind'Amour, and it wasn't the same as Glenn Wesley or Ron Francis. But at the end of the day, when you got to the rink, that there was a common goal. If they went home to their families and were in bed by 9 o'clock and I did my thing and played golf and I got to bed at midnight, it didn't matter. At the end of the day, when we got to the rink, we were working towards the same goal and everybody was on the same page. And you guys know this. I mean, in sports, not everybody's the same. Not everybody's Mark Scheifele dialed in hockey guy where they're watching footage of hockey. I can remember talking to guys, and they're like, they didn't know different players on different lineups when they would post the roster before the game, and that's just the way that they went about it. And nobody expects everyone to be dialed-in hockey nerd guy that knows the flex of everybody's stick and this and that. But at the end of the day, you got to come in and put in the work. And I don't know. It's just a weird dynamic where I know how Wheeler and I know how Scheifele are, and I understand that, and I appreciate their work and their love for the game and how much attention they pay to everything. But I do find it shocking how Patrick Laine couldn't be sitting there saying, okay, We got Stastny back. I could be on a line with him and Ehlers. We could be probably the best second line in hockey. I don't know why that wouldn't be an advantageous situation for him. I mean, if he's that pissed off not playing with Mark Scheifele, I really don't know. I don't understand how he couldn't say, man, we're a really good team right now. I can't wait to be in that lineup. We got our second line centerman there, and that's a really good line, and that should make me happy. So I don't know. Maybe it's just past the point with him where he's so disappointed that he's not up with those top guys. And I think as an organization, they're probably saying, we're not going to let you, we're not going to let you handcuff us and demand to play with certain guys. So it's just at a point now. And the worst thing would be that him just sitting at home next year and you get nothing. You don't get him on the ice and you don't get anything back for him. So yeah, I hope it works out. I hope he goes back to Winnipeg and they can patch this thing up.
Yeah, and I think we all agree with you. And, you know, just sticking with Laine here, and we do want to ask you, you know, about the Leafs eventually, but Laine is obviously, you know, the
this
the
is a Winnipeg show. Who cares about the Leafs?
Exactly. I love it, Jeff.
No, we got to talk about Jumbo Joe. But, no, O-Dog, I mean, when you mentioned, you know, the usage and everything like that, I mean, it's pretty clear that, you know, Laine over the years has wanted to play with Mark Scheifele on that top line. But when you look at, you know, the situation, you know, that Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets are in, if this does go down the trade route, I mean, how hard is this going to be, as you mentioned, because unless you're getting – you know, one of the best goal scorers in the league in return, or unless you're getting a, you know, a stud top 10, top 15 defenseman, how are you ever going to win this trade if you're going to be trading Laine for, you know, a player, a prospect, and a draft pick?
And guess what's going to happen if they ever do trade him? They're going to be saying, everyone in Winnipeg, and Sarah Orlesky is going to be reporting on SportsCenter. She's going to be saying, man, the Winnipeg Jets are dying for some second-line scoring depth. And it's just a vicious cycle where you have such a talented guy, and it's just for some reason it's not working out. And I don't know. I just think that I have a high thought. You know, I think highly of Patrick Laine in his ability. Do I like his approach to the game? Do I think he needs to grow? He needs to grow up and adjust his thinking and kind of understand that he's got skin in the game and he can't just go out there and do what he wants. I think there's more there for him, but I think ultimately what needs to happen is I think he needs to get in a room with Scheifele and Wheeler and Paul Maurice and Chevy and just hash it out and just see if this thing can be fixed, because it, like I said, I don't care who they bring in there. They're not going to be, I don't even think, on equal level as far as a trade. I mean, unless who's one of the better young defensemen in the game right now?
Zach Werenski.
Yeah, if they got Zach Werenski, I'm like, I'd be like, see you later, Laine, goodbye. Have fun in Columbus. But other than, if it's not that, then I would just be like, I don't like the trade. That's just the plain fact of it. It's just, if you're not getting Seth Jones or Zach Werenski or somebody like that, then it's just, I just don't think you're getting value back. And this guy could be one of the greatest goal scorers to ever play the game. It's just that simple. He's that good at scoring goals. And yeah, he needs to round out his game, but if it's, that's a great guy right there. If it's not Werenski, I don't like the deal. And I do not think Columbus is willing to let Werenski go.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Jeff O'Neill from TSN 1050 in Toronto. The Overdrive Show, which you listen to and you watch on a daily basis, is our guest. We're talking about Patrick Laine.
You know, Jeff, the one thing that's, you know, a little surprising here, especially in Winnipeg, is the fact that Jets went out and made a trade to acquire Paul Stastny. So you thought to yourself, you know, this is going to calm down. And that's exactly what happened. We didn't see anything in the news for the last week. And then Pierre LeBrun does a, you know, touches base with Laine's agents. You know, I'm of the opinion that I thought Laine's agents made a mistake. I think that they shouldn't have offered a comment, because I think they've put the Jets into a tough position now, because now they're in an even weaker position. As a player, would you be surprised that your agent would speak in that way? Would your agent have spoken in that way without having discussed it with you first? Because to me, again, you've now put Laine into a situation where, if he stays with the Jets, he's going to have to answer questions now all year.
Golden rule, let me just interrupt you there. Golden rule is anything going through the play. Craig Button has said this many times, and I completely agree with it. Anything going through your agent's mouth is said through you, because these guys aren't stupid. It's not like that nonsense in Vegas with the sword and the Alan Walsh stuff. Marc-Andre Fleury knew that was going to happen. No agent is dumb enough to make that pick or whatever the hell that thing was, or make a comment like Mike Liu made without the client knowing. They just do not blurt that stuff out. It's too important. the keeping the client happy and their business and all that is too important. Anything the agent says goes through the player. So Mike Liu's comments, I don't know exactly what they are. All I know is it was something to the effect of, I think it's in both parties' interest for the player to move on. Patrick Laine would have known that that comment is coming. No agent would just blurt that out with him being in the, you know, in the blind one on that one. It just wouldn't have happened. So anything the agent says is through the player.
Jeff O'Neill's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeff, you know Paul Maurice very well. He was obviously your coach back in Carolina. You know, I guess sort of a two-part question. Do you think that he holds some of the blame for the, how this situation has unfolded? And what's his perception sort of around the league? Blake Wheeler can't speak highly enough about him, but you wonder younger players where he's so, you know, hesitant to put them into roles. You know, how do younger players generally feel about Paul Maurice?
At the end of the day, Paul, he was my coach basically my whole career. He ended up in Toronto and I was in Toronto. And he's just, you got to earn your stripes with him where he understands that there could be an off day, like Scheifele and Wheeler and Connor, they have off days, but he has enough trust and belief in what their ability is and their ability to work the next day or the next shift that he doesn't have to worry about it. What Patrick Laine hasn't shown, and this is the perfect situation to talk about it, he hasn't trusted him enough where it's like, okay, Patty, you had a bad shift, you had a bad game, you're going to show up tomorrow and be the hardest working guy on the ice, and this is just going to be a thing in the past. That doesn't happen with him. It kind of drags in, and it lasts for a month. It might last for 2 weeks. With those other guys, it might last a period or a shift or a game, but then it's over with. So I think that's all you have to do with Paul. You have to make him understand and gain his trust that a bad shift or a bad play or a bad giveaway or a bad back check is just a one-off. And until you prove that, he's going to have a difficult time trusting you. He understands the goal-scoring ability, but he understands also that the two-way game, the way the game is played now, is so important. So until you prove that, then you'll gain the ultimate trust from him.
When you have, we talked about almost the factions and or the different approaches to the game. Let's call it that as opposed to factions, I think. When does it become that it's too far gone to salvage? I mean, if you were, in the Jets organization right now, if you were Kevin Cheveldayoff and you're trying to, smooth these waters because you don't want to trade Patrick Laine because he's a generational, talent. How do you smooth the waters, or when do you determine that you have to cut bait because it's just too far gone?
Well, first of all, trading him right now is a ridiculous thing to do anyway because the player has just come out and said, I think it's in the best interest for me to leave. So what the hell kind of leverage do you have? Zero.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just like Vegas trying to move money out when they're up against the cap or Tampa Bay Lightning. They were trying to give Tyler Johnson away, and it was just like they had no leverage. Everybody knew that they're trying to dump salary. There's no leverage to acquire the guy. So if it really comes down to the situation where you have to move him, I want him to score 15 or 20 goals as soon as the season starts. And then if that really is a situation that has to happen, then you might have some leverage because everybody knows Laine's back and he's scoring goals again. But to salvage the situation, it's very simple. It would be pretty stupid and so 2020 to have to set up a Zoom call. But I want Mark Scheifele, I want Blake Wheeler, I want Paul Maurice, and I want Chevy and Laine in the same room to see if they can hash it out. And if they can't, it's still not happening right now because, I said, there's no leverage in the situation. But further down the line, that's something you got to look at. Like if he says, I want to be traded, I'm not showing up, you got a problem on your hands. But just to say, okay, Laine's on the market right now, he wants out, the team really has no leverage. So if that's the case, I'd let him sit. But I really don't want it to come to this. I hope it gets sorted out there. But from what the sounds of it is, it doesn't look like it's going to be.
Jeff O'Neill is with TSN 1050 in Toronto. You can watch him and you can listen to him Monday through Friday on Overdrive. Jeff, I appreciate your time, your insight, your analysis. This was terrific. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Always enjoy doing it.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets, more on Patrick Laine. We'll read some of your texts and your tweets as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Trouba will go back for it.
Lead pass, Rostovic is in alone, scores! Perreault into the slot to Rostovic, scores! Jack Rostovic has the magic stick right now. Trouba down to Brian Little at the right side. Slot for Rostovic, scores! Jack Rostovic, another power play goal. He has his first NHL hat trick.
Our buddy Dennis Bayak with the call, that from last February. Or February 2019, if I'm recalling correctly, Jack Roslovic with the hat trick against the Anaheim Ducks in a 8-2, if I recall correctly, Jets victory.
The Hattie.
Dennis called that his first NHL hat trick, but it was his first hat trick period. He didn't have a hat trick in the AHL.
Okay.
And he never had a hat trick in college.
Well, there you go. Dave Minuk.
Hat tricks are very rare in college.
Well, Jack Roslovic's also like a distributor. He's a passer. He's not really.
I wonder if Connor probably had one or two, but you don't see hat tricks very often, right?
Connor had more than one or two. He was like insane.
No, but what I'm saying is like there's only a few guys, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. It's not a very common thing.
You see it a lot more in, you know, OHL, WHL, right? Q.
Much more, of course, Winnipeg Jets talk this Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. We'll talk about Jack Roslovic because it sounds like he's potentially on his way out of the city as well. You know, prior to, I guess, Thursday, you know, that was going to be our lead topic on the show, is that, you know, Jack Roslovic trade talk heating up, and then Thursday happened, and the insider trading happened, and all of a sudden that's getting, as you can see, pushed back into about the halfway point of the broadcast.
Yeah, well, I'll say this much, though. I mean, you look at that right side, right? And if you're trading Patrick Laine, which we obviously don't know if that's going to happen, it could happen, but I wouldn't want to trade another first-round pick on the right side, right? And, like, you know, Roslovic, there is the usage there. And, you know, I've said this on the show before. I think we all agree he's a very talented player. Mm-hmm. But I think on the Jets, with the top six they have, with Connor and Ehlers and Wheeler and Laine in that top six, you know, it's been tough for him to certainly be a winger in the top six. And now you bring in Paul Stastny as your second line center. So is Jack Roslovic now going to be on that third line again with Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry, right? And it looks like that. So, I mean, maybe he is the odd man out. And we know that Roslovic's going to get a nice little salary bump, right, on his next contract. He's an RFA. He's not going to be one of the highest paid guys on the Jets if he stays on the Jets. Yeah. But, you know, he's going to
make a couple million dollars.
Yeah, he's going to be making a nice salary, and he deserves it. And, you know, again, going back to what we were talking about with O-Dog, I mean, I do hope there is still a chance, you know, that Roslovic stays on the Jets. I realize, you know, the Twitter machine gets going and everybody thinks it's a foregone conclusion that Roslovic's going to be traded for Mackenzie Weegar on the Florida Panthers, right? And I wouldn't be so quick to think that trade is going to happen tomorrow or within the next week or two. I mean, I think when you're a first-round pick, and Dave and I have gone to the drafts for many years, Drew, you've gone to drafts. I mean, when you have a player who's a first-round pick, mm-hmm. there's always going to be high expectations that, oh, he's 22, 23 years old. He's got to be on the second line by now. If he's on the third line, he's a flop. Jack Roslovic's not a flop. I think it's taken him a while to have those results at the NHL level. And, yes, part of that is because he hasn't played with, you know, Mark Scheifele or, you know, Paul Stastny or whoever the second line center was. But I think, you know, there still can be a role for him on this team. And that's simply because he's got that skill. But if he does end up getting traded, then, yeah, I would hope that, you know, it's probably the defense that's addressed. So whether that's a guy like Mackenzie Weegar, you know, Travis Dermott is a guy that Marat put out there. Dermott's a good defenseman. I'll take Dermott on the second pair of the Jets if Derek Forbort's not going to be that guy. But, you know, he might just be the odd man out. That might just be the case. You have Jansen Harkins emerging. I'd have no problem with Jansen Harkins on my third line.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Another first-round pick mm-hmm. of the Winnipeg Jets who doesn't seem destined to be a long-term player for the Jets.
Okay.
You know, is this just a matter of circumstances that maybe there wasn't the opportunity for Roslovic because of the talent that's above him in the lineup? Or is this another instance where you can say a younger player has been, again, my words, mishandled by the organization? Remember, he was drafted as a center.
Yeah.
and then he was playing center for the Moose until, I guess, the last 10 games before he got called up by the Jets, when they all of a sudden turned him into a winger.
Well, they just wanted him to be, that was the role he was
going to play. That was the role he was going to play with the Jets, and he's never had that opportunity to show what he could do at center since then. So is that a factor that he's not, you know, he's not suited to be an NHL center? Or is that a factor of, again, the organization maybe jerking around a player and stifling his growth to suit their short-term needs?
It's a good question. I mean, again, I look at Jack Roslovic, and he's a guy who at the AHL level was dominant. I mean, he was a phenomenal player in the American Hockey League. And when the Moose were, you know, and you know, when the Moose in November, I think they lost like two games all of November with Jack Roslovic like as their center. And they were, like, I mean, when I take November, I'm talking about like 2017.
Yeah.
But
a few years back.
But the point is that they were unbelievable. Actually, yeah. And it, I was just making sure I was right. It was 2017. And so you thought, okay, well, how are they going to translate that? How are they going to get that same level of success? Now, we know that generally you don't necessarily go from top line center on the American Hockey League team to the top line center. It's not a one-for-one situation.
Right.
So we know that there's going to be a little bit of time put in. The American Hockey League is time put in to develop your game. And then in the NHL, you don't necessarily have it right away. You have to earn it. To me personally, again, I would have liked the Jets to give Jack Roslovic that chance when Brian Little went down with that concussion in the final game of the preseason against Minnesota.
Last year.
Mm-hmm. And they had a 10-game window before Brian Little was ready to return. Mm-hmm. And they put Andrew Kopp in that situation. I personally would have liked to have seen Jack Roslovic go, because I think Jack Roslovic, the one thing Jack Roslovic is phenomenal at, and we saw it a little bit this year, he had 17 assists, is passing. And I think he's a phenomenal puck distributor. And I think with guys like Laine and Ehlers, two shooters, I think he would have been in a good role. Now, again, would it have necessarily worked? Maybe not. But I just say you would have had an opportunity. You would have had a window. It's like the Eric Comrie situation. Everybody goes, oh, he's not an NHL goalie. I go, well, how do you know that? Because of one game in isolation here or a game there where he comes in. Again, you have to give these guys an opportunity. Now, do you necessarily want the NHL to be your proving ground? Not always. But you kind of want to know, is this guy going to be able to be a center? Now, the Jets could have said, here's the situation. We want him to be the Brian Little replacement, which is always what we've talked about, right?
Sure.
Jack Roslovic.
When he was drafted.
When he was drafted, when he was in the American Hockey League, when he was first in the NHL, we said he's not going to be that player now, but in 2, 3, 4 years, he'll be that player. So that to me is kind of what you were setting him up to be. And if you were, and again, it's all about conversation, communication. And if it's not communicated, then that's where the failure results.
Let me talk about communications for a second, Ezzy, because I want this. Is there, does it seem, admittedly, from our vantage point, external to the day-to-day operations, does it seem that there's a communication gap between the head coach and his players more often than not? It doesn't seem like there's a communication gap where, you know, you go into business nowadays and you go into a lot of different businesses and they want a development plan for an employee. Okay, you're coming in at this role, you're being drafted, we're going to see you as a centerman in the AHL, and then we're going to see you come up and play some games in the NHL on the wing, and then we're going to see you as a centerman in the NHL as you get more comfortable. Do the Jets, are they lacking with those development plans when it comes to their young players and then communicating that plan between the management, between the coach and those players?
It's such a hard question to ask because we're not in the meetings. We've covered the team since they came back in 2011. We watch all the games. We follow the practices. We analyze the lines. We're into all the minutiae of the Winnipeg Jets. But I mean, it ultimately comes when you're talking about Roslovic, Drew, because each player is different. And this is what I'll say. And I think it's a valid question that you ask. And it's just, we don't have enough time really to answer that question because we're up against the break here. But I'll say this much. Dave makes a good point about Roslovic was a point per game player when he played that, in 2017 with the Moose. He was a point per game and then he got called up as a center. And what I think, you know, having followed hockey, all of us, having followed hockey all those years, it's easier for certain players to make the transition at the pro level to wing than others. And I think a perfect example is Jansen Harkins, right? And I think it's also the style that they play. Jansen Harkins is, I know you guys hate this, but, you know, more of a 200-foot player, right? He mm-hmm. can play more of that, like, defensive style, maybe, you know, digging those pucks up in the corner and making those kind of simple plays and, you know, a different type of player than Roslovic. But you could go year by year in the NHL, year by year, and look at guys that were natural centers that have been forced to, not forced is maybe not the right word, but have been asked to play the wing. I'll give you, Max Domi is an example.
Sure. Alex Galchenyuk.
Alex Galchenyuk, the guy I was thinking, second overall pick in the Oilers draft 2014, Sam Reinhart, natural center, asked to play the wing, right? Like, and certain guys are better at it than others. And I'm not saying Roslovic has been bad at it, but I think when you ask him to play with guys like Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry, who are obviously, you know, more of those types of, you know, defensive-minded forwards, let's say. I mean, they can chip in goals, don't get me wrong, but that's a checking line. We all know that that's a checking line. These are not guys that are going to score 25 goals each. Maybe if you put Kopp up on the second line, you know, maybe he gets 25 goals, 50 points. But the point here is, I think that's something that needs to be, you know, addressed, is that, you know, Roslovic maybe hasn't, because he's been on that third line, on the wing, mm-hmm. and he's been asked to play a different type of role, that's not the type of player he is. Right. And I agree with Dave. I think if you put him with skilled players like Ehlers and Laine, he probably does get 50 points, 60 points, because he's not your prototypical, you know, shoot-first type of player. He is a guy, he's skilled, great stick handler, great skater. He's a guy that, you know, needs to pass the puck to shooters like Laine and Ehlers.
It seems, to your point, Dave, that when they didn't move Roslovic into that second-line center role, mm-hmm. you know, with Little's injury, it's a missed opportunity, and it's almost a vote of no confidence in the player. And that falls on the head coach to me. And a lot of what we've been talking about for the last, you know, hour and 40 minutes, give or take, to me just boils back down onto the head coach and some of the decision-making being very, I'll be polite, curious in how he deploys his players.
Here's a crazy notion. You got your top line with the Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor. You got the second line of Stastny, Laine, Ehlers. You've got the fourth line of Lowry, Perreault, and Kopp. And you do the class of 2015, Harkins, Appleton, and Roslovic as your third line. Because to me, you need a scoring third line. That's what the Jets don't really get a tremendous amount of scoring from that third line. So the Lowry line is your fourth line.
I agree with you.
Like, to me, that's the one thing we never really seem to talk about, is the Lowry line doesn't provide enough offense to be a third line. You need production from a top nine. Like, the idea that we talk top six, it's so antiquated.
Well,
let me finish.
That's why you hear middle six, top six, right, versus, you know, top nine, bottom three.
Right.
Right?
Right. But I'm just saying, like, to me, it's a function of you need scoring from that third line. Those guys can all score. They can all pass the puck. They're all familiar with each other. They had chemistry when we saw them. It was very small sample size, obviously. But to me, you move the Lowry line to be your effective checking line, because they're not producing a ton of goals. Mm-hmm. And then you have that third line of, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a young gun line, but that's, you know, you're producing a lot of offense.
I know that. You know that. Ezzy knows that. I don't know that the head coach knows that. That is a big problem. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets, we'll talk about some of the signings from earlier this week, much more on the trade discussions floating around and surrounding this franchise. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.